Blog Talk Radio.
I do whatever I can, wherever I am, whenever you want me to. Yeah, you have a friend in me till the end. Whatever I can, I'll do for you.
Well, welcome everyone to another great episode of Relationship Marketing 101 here on Blog Talk Radio. I am your host, Gina Gaudio-Graves, the Dean and Founder of DirectionsUniversity.com. And today we've got a great guest that I cannot wait to talk to. I'm hoping that my co-host, Rhonda Del Baccio, is along in a few minutes, but I haven't seen her yet today. So we'll see if I can find her while we get this show underway. Our guest today is a guy that sounds like he's got a really neat background. And he goes by the name of the Geek Whisperer. He basically says, you know, it's time to tame your savage technology. And boy, I am really all with that one.
Absolutely.
Oh, you are there, Rhonda.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I was trying to field questions from somebody and get on the show at the same time, and it was getting a little bit much, so sorry about that.
Oh, well, good. I am
so excited to be here.
I am so glad to have my co-host, Rhonda Del Baccio, the story lady online with us from ProfitableStorytelling.com. So, Rhonda, you want to do the wonderful introduction, or do you want me to do it?
Well, you can do it, but I'll tell you what, if I might just mention first, I am really thrilled. I met Stephen very recently, and what's really cool about him, he calls himself the Geek Whisperer, but he is all about the relationships that the technology can bring you, which is what is so exciting about all of this.
That is really cool. So our guest today is Stephen Hallquist, the Geek Whisperer. Stephen is a business leader focused on results for both the business and the people who make up the business. He's convinced that success comes at the junction of accomplishment and personal peace and works with his clients to develop approaches that address all of these aspects. Stephen also offers professional services to businesses and organizational leaders, providing insights on people, processes, and products that will move them toward their goals. I can't wait to see what Stephen has to share with us today and how relationships are built through technology. So, Stephen, welcome to today's show.
Thanks so much, Gina and Rhonda. It's great to be on here with you.
Absolutely.
So, you've got to tell me more about this whole idea of the Geek Whisperer and taming your savage technology.
Well, I don't know about you, but most of the people that I talk to have a love-hate relationship with just about every piece of technology in their lives.
Oh, that's definitely me. Count me up.
And you know, the bottom line is, frankly, nothing at all in our life is really worth anything unless it gives back.
That is true.
And a lot of times technology doesn't. And that, in my mind anyway, is a problem that we need to fix. And so my job is, it's sort of twofold. Number one, it's helping people understand how technology can help them, and perhaps more importantly, if it can help with what they're trying to do. And then secondly, to make sure that they stay on target, they stay on focus with whatever they're doing, let's just make sure that it's serving you. And if it's not serving you, let's get it out of your life.
Oh, I'm off of that one too.
Yeah, absolutely.
So let me give you a couple of examples. I don't know, you know, how all of your listeners might experience their computers, but I went for a lot of years. My wife would tell me that I would complain about a certain billionaire who lived in Redmond, Washington, fairly frequently, because of all of the problems that I was having with my computers, and I spent more time working on my computers than on my on the real work, on getting stuff done. And so I made some changes around how I used them and what I did with them and how much time I spent with them. And frankly, I changed the kind of computer I was using as well. And as a result, I don't spend any time yelling at my computers or frustrated that they aren't working correctly or troubleshooting them for days on end. I don't do any of that anymore. I write. I do work for my clients. I focus in again on the productive work, and you know, it's kind of interesting. My frustration and my stress level's gone down pretty dramatically as well. So a lot of what I focus on then is helping other people kind of get past the fear and the frustration and all of the things that get in the way, and you know, help them find sort of the zero resistance part of using technology.
Sorry, Rhonda, go ahead.
I'm sorry, that is phenomenal. Zero resistance. You know, you hear a lot about, you know, and it's really law of attraction type of stuff, that if you fight against something, you call it to you. And you're talking about zero resistance so that things are working for you and with you and things are flowing together. And what a terrific concept, right, Gina?
It sure is. So I was checking out your blog, and you're not talking just about computers. You're talking about technology in general, right?
Absolutely, because after all, you know, it all fits together. You know, I have spent about 25 years in various technology, roles and positions in consulting, and I've been helping folks with it for about 20 years now, and one of the things that I learned early on is that, you know, if you have, for example, a very poor process and you apply technology to it, you just do the wrong thing faster.
Right.
And so a big part of what I help, especially entrepreneurs and small business folks, and I've worked with the big companies, but I really enjoy working with the smaller companies and or with employees who are really trying to get stuff done. What I help them understand and help them focus in on is, okay, what am I trying to accomplish? What am I trying to get done here? And then ask the question, can technology help me do this? Whether it's, you know, and maybe we'll get a chance to talk about some of this, whether it's something as seemingly inane as Facebook or Twitter or, you know, something as complex as a big computer system, but can it actually help me get stuff done? And if it can, then how? And at the end of the day, is it worth whatever the investment is, whatever the cost is to me of doing it, or should I just not bother? Because it's, you know, the cost equation doesn't work out. So we look at all of that stuff in the context of the bottom line being, what are you trying to get done? And at the end of the day, will it serve you well? And that's the amazing thing about this whole idea of, you know, no resistance around it, is that when it is serving you and it is serving you well, then it's a very gentle, very natural process. But when it's keeping you from getting stuff done, when it is in the way, when it's creating more problems than it is solving, that's when I think all of us have experienced that rush of adrenaline that says, this isn't right. And so it's learning how to keep as much as possible in the flow, in the natural connection between what we're trying to get done and whatever we're using, the tools we use to get it done. And the balancing act over to the other side is let's not spend a whole lot of time in that other place where it's not serving us.
So how do you get started being able to do that?
Well, that is a very interesting question, and hopefully the answer will be interesting as well. When I was in college, I studied a very broad range of things, everything from psychology to religion to theater. And in fact, I tell people, what I really want to do is be an actor, but I didn't want to wait tables the rest of my life. So with an eclectic blend, what I discovered is I understood technology. It somehow intuitively made sense to me, and I had the math skills and physics and all that to become an engineer, and so I did. But very quickly I discovered that I didn't really care about the nuts and bolts and the jots and tittles of the theory around technology. For me, it was about how does it serve people? Because ultimately, all of life is about people and our relationships to them, all of life. And so very quickly I focused in on, okay, well, where's the bridge between these two? And what I discovered, to my surprise, is that there weren't very many people thinking about that. You know, most people were just, you know, trying to solve a problem better, trying to build a cooler thing, trying to create, bigger, better, faster, without asking
right.
the most important question, which is, how does this serve people?
Gotcha.
If somebody is, you know, okay, that's really cool. I want my technology to serve me instead of feeling like I'm the slave to my technology. But how can I do that in such a way that I also build an audience of listeners and not just a bunch of people following me who aren't paying any attention?
Well, absolutely right. And so let me turn the question around, because I think technology only makes sense when we can come up with an analog in life. So let me give you an analog in life. How, if you have a product to sell or a service to sell or some way that you are trying to engage with prospects, do you stand on the street corner and, you know, wear a sandwich board and yell out what they can buy from you? I mean, it's one possibility. It's not really an audience. You might have passers-by. I don't know how successful those are. Every once in a while I see somebody out with a sandwich board for a pizza, and I wonder, does anybody ever stop? I mean, I don't know. But, you know, they're obviously paying somebody to stand up there and advertise, so they must think there's some value in it. But that's sort of one end of the spectrum, right? And the other end of the spectrum is, you know, for example, Rhonda, you and I met through a mutual friend, someone that we
right.
both know. And when Scott suggested that you and I get to know each other, it was a no-brainer for us to connect. It was like, well, of course. You know, if Scott says I need to meet Rhonda, I need to meet Rhonda. And so that's the other end of the spectrum. Now, the challenge is
sure.
that between those two is a lot of different time and energy and effort. You know, the process of, you know, meeting somebody whizzing by on the freeway, if you can call that meeting them, is a much faster, lower cost process than, you know, a few emails and phone calls and so on. And so technology actually can help speed up getting to know somebody. You can, you know, and you guys already do some of this, maybe a lot of it. This show, for example, is a perfect example of using technology to connect with a wider audience in a more intimate way than you otherwise
mm-hmm.
could. They hear your voice. They get to know how you interact with people. They hear your ideas. There's an intimacy that's created, but technology allows you to create it to a larger number of people all at the same time. And there are other kinds of technology that automate that process of creating networks with people, or broadcasting little snippets of your life, or communicating by video or photo or whatever. All of those technologies,
right.
if they're used wisely and strategically, enable you to build that audience faster and communicate with them and have them feel like they know you. And I think, again, that's the key, is that we actually build relationships. We don't simply broadcast into the ether like that guy wearing the
sunglasses. Sorry, I'll fix my dog. I'll be right back.
That was Fritz broadcasting into the ether.
There you go. That's right. That's right. So does that kind of get to some of the ways of thinking about this?
Oh, and absolutely it does. So the kinds of things that we talk about here on the Relationship Marketing 101 on this show, is you really about building the relationships. And of course, there here's an interesting thing to talk about. Now, this whole thing about automating aspects of your networking, you know, whether you use automation with Twitter, some people say, for example, you should never automate a direct message, and they say you should just handpick whom you're going to follow, and other people say, let me just follow everybody, we'll sort them out later, I don't have time to sit there and look at everything and, you know, whatever. I'd rather just start communicating with the meaningful people and passing on meaningful stuff. So what is your concept of how you incorporate automation into what you're doing in a way that still builds relationships?
Great question. So the first and most important element of that, I think, is that you have to have a strategy. You have to decide what you're trying to do. What
mm-hmm.
kind of people are you trying to reach?
Yep.
And I think different people will answer that in different ways, and that's one of the reasons why you see different approaches.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some people have very specific products and services that address a fairly small niche, and so for them to broadcast to an extremely wide audience is probably a waste. For others, they have a more general message, a more general strategy that they're reaching more niches or broader niches or so on, and they may have a focus to reach that broader audience in a way that is different from the first person. So, as an example, one of my clients is a expert in removing mercury from your mouth. He's a dentist and believes very strongly that mercury has no place in your mouth and is working on educating people about the issues of toxic mercury and all that stuff. His niche is such that he's building it around a certain group of people first, health people that are very concerned about, understanding toxins and all that kind of stuff, and building that network first, and then that will give him a stepping off place to connect with the people that they already know.
Mm-hmm.
So that's an example of a strategy that's wrapped around, what a particular person's trying to do. And I think a lot of people step into, some new technology, and social media is a perfect example. People step into it, and they don't really have a reason. They just think it's new, and they need to know about it, and so they just, they kind of blah, they get into it and don't necessarily think through what they're trying to accomplish. And the challenge there is, I mean, it's not so much around the following, but I've seen people who ended up wasting days, not really accomplishing anything because they hadn't thought it through first.
Well, Gina, where have you heard the word strategy before?
Oh, I don't know.
Gee, we're laughing, Stephen, because that's for both of us. And what's really funny is we have such a similar approach to everything, which is all about serving the audience and moving from strategy. And so to hear you talking about, well, you have to go into it with a plan. Gina, I think we thank you to Stephen for making our point for us that everything should start with a strategy, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's right. And it only makes sense. It only makes sense because, as I said a little bit earlier, if what you're automating is a poor idea, then all you do is you do the poor thing faster, and
mm-hmm.
it doesn't get you where you want to go. So, and as you guys focus on as well, where do you want to go? What's the ultimate objective here? And this gets back to, where one of the places we started in this conversation, which is, look, the ultimate objective isn't even, to make a lot of money or to have a successful business or to market well or any of those. That's not the ultimate objective. The ultimate objective is to create a life of passion and love and connection with the world that feeds you, that doesn't take from you but gives to you, because it's just everything that you're made, you're created to do. That's the ultimate objective. And for each of us, that's defined in a different way, and that looks different. It's what makes us unique. But ultimately, that's the objective. And everything, including the success in our business, including our marketing, including our relationships, including anything as mundane as technology, all of those things have to serve that end. And the only way that they'll do that consistently is if we keep that end in mind, we remember why we're doing this, we remember that all the processes and all the technology we apply, all the work that we do is specifically at the service of that ultimate objective, which has a bunch of intermediate objectives, but it's at the service of that ultimate thing. And so if it fails to feed us and fails to move us in that direction and doesn't have a clear result that moves us in that direction for the investment we have to make, then we need to very, very strongly and specifically analyze whether or not that step is worth taking and whether or not it serves us, and to remove it out of our lives if it doesn't. And, you know, I will tell you, when I made my shift in computer systems, now probably 4 years ago I did this, it was a fairly big step for a guy who had been in technology at that point for more than 20 years and had carried the same kind of computer for more than 10. And, you know, I made a very dramatic shift. And it's not about, you know, I'm specifically not telling you what I did because it's not about, you know, a specific choice that I made, but it's about what it gave me back. What I decided was my technology wasn't serving me. It was enslaving me. And that's not what I was about in life. I wasn't about sitting in my office screwing around with my computer to make it work. That wasn't serving anybody. And so I made a dramatic change, and it wasn't, you know, intuitive. It wasn't simple. I had to go through the change process that we all go through when we try something new. But it was worth it. And I can look back on it and go, yeah, compared to what it was before, I mean, especially compared to that, but I have a pretty zero-resistance life around my computers now. You know, now helping other people with their computers, that might be a different story. But, you know, but with my own, it's a pretty smooth, zero-resistance kind of existence, and I like that. And so, again, I think a lot of this is about how do we make sure that the stuff that we're doing in life, whether it's the way that we market or the technology we apply, let's make sure that it's in service to that ultimate goal that we have and the steps that are between here and there.
Great. Well, so Stephen, how about if you give a specific type of strategy that somebody can say, okay, yeah, I want to have this zero resistance relationship with my technology. I want to have it serve me instead of me being the slave to the technology. And I understand and I keep hearing, you know, that people need to do social networking and they build relationships. So how am I going to do that in a no-resistance way? Go ahead and give us a strategy or two that people can start applying.
Sure. That's a great question, and I feel like you kind of pulled me back, which is great because I can get off a little bit. Let me pull us into that comment I made earlier that technology needs to have an analog in the real world in order for us to really connect with it and kind of get it. So with social media, let me talk about it like that. So perhaps you've been to a networking event or a party or some other opportunity where there are a lot of people milling about and you get a chance to meet people, you know, maybe for the first time, or maybe you've seen them before, but you don't know them very well. You ever been in one of those situations?
Absolutely.
Yeah. So when you do, and you walk up to somebody and you're introduced to them, is the first thing you say, you know, "Hi, I'm Gina. I sell marketing. I have some e-books. I have some books. I have a radio show." Is that what you do?
No,
of course not, right? Of course not. You know,
exactly.
If you do, you're the biggest jerk in the room, right? And everyone's like,
wow,
"Look away from you," right?
And we know people that do that, though, Stephen. I know Gina and I both know folks like that.
Of course. Of course. But you're not like that, and your listeners aren't like that, and being like that doesn't get you success. You know, nobody buys from that person. They just don't. They move away from them. You know, you don't build a relationship that way. You build walls that way. Well, okay, so that's kind of the real-world analog I want to start with. That's the analog for things like Twitter. And, you know, sometimes Facebook and some of these other social sites, you're just kind of getting to know people. Now, Facebook, if it's just your real-world friends, that might be a little bit different. But Twitter certainly is standing in a, you know, in a networking event, in a room, at a party, whatever, with a bunch of people that you don't know very well. And to stand there in the party and, you know, pull out the bullhorn and tell people that they should buy from you is counterproductive. You know, it's foolish.
How to lose friends and irritate people.
Yeah, exactly, right? And so don't do it, right? So those environments are a great place to network and meet people and create superficial relationships. So keep it that way. Talk about the weather, you know. Talk about, you know, what you're running out to do today. Talk about a thought that you have. Talk about, you know, something that you think most of the people out there will at least be able to relate to or connect with. I'll give you an example. I will often, I live in just outside Boulder, Colorado, and I often will talk about the weather. Yeah, God, this morning it was, and this is true, this morning it was beautiful. Sun was out, the trees are green, the grass is green, the wind was still, the breeze was still a little cool. It was beautiful this morning, and I'm grateful that I got to see it and breathe that air, and I'll share that in the morning. Just, there's no reason. I'm not selling anything. I have no ulterior motives. It's what's on my mind. And that's the kind of thing that we talk about at a, you know, a party or a networking event or, you know, whatever. We just want to get a little glimpse of what do you like? You know, do I want to know you better? do I want to hang out with you, you know? And then let's say you meet somebody at one of these events and you decide that they're kind of interesting. You know, you did your superficial talk. You maybe went down the one level below news, weather, sports and decided that, yeah, you know, let's get to know each other. When that happens with you, what do you do next?
Yeah, a little bit better acquainted and get to know what's important to the other person. Just kind of think about it just like in any other relationship to me where you aren't rushing things. You're just getting to know each other, finding out what's important. And to me, also sharing good resources that you find and those kinds of things.
Yeah. So yeah. Exactly. So what I tend to do is, I'll usually get their, you know, their phone number and their email address, and I might suggest that we get together. You know, you want to have coffee next week? You know, outside of this noisy networking event party thing that we're in now, do you want to you know go grab a cup of coffee? Or if it's someone that I'm really sure that I want to spend some time with, we might have a meal, or they might, you know, even come to my house for a barbecue, or you know whatever. But we take to the next level, right? So what's the next level online? Well, the next level online is your blog. It's a place where you kind of show more of yourself. You can expand on ideas. You can, you know, share things like a video or audio or photos or whatever, as well as your ideas in text. And it's the next level down. But you're still not, you know, you don't sit down and right away sell to them. You keep talking. You let them get to know you. You get to know them. And it's not until they ask the question, so what do? That the door becomes open to talk about your business. And that might be them subscribing to an email list or a special part of your blog or a particular YouTube channel or something else that you make available and say, if you want to know more about what I do and how I help people, you know, here's how you find out. You subscribe here, you check this out, you go over here, and you take that natural progression that we use every day in life, and we forget about in our technology world, but we do use it every day in life, and people know intuitively that there's a process there. And yet when they can automate it, they want to take you right to the, you know, hi, my name's Fred, buy this. You know?
Yeah.
And I think that as we talk about strategy, that's part of that process. And I'll take it one step further and tell you this. I think it only really works well if it's authentic.
Yeah.
I think if you don't really want to get to know people, then I think the 21st century holds a bunch of really significant obstacles for you. Because people don't buy from corporations anymore. They don't buy from, you know, well, I'll give you an example. I grew up in Michigan. I grew up in a city that was the home of General Motors, a little city called Flint, Michigan. And my first job with a company was at a GM company called AC. And so I've watched with interest the death of an industry that still doesn't understand why it exists, in at least in the U.S. And the reason any industry exists, any organization exists, is to service and serve well their customers. And if your customers don't like what you're doing and what you're building, what you're creating, then you better either find other customers that like it or build something else.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of people that don't want to do that because that's work. You got to think. You can't keep doing what you've always been doing. And yet, it's the only way to survive in the 21st century because there's no such thing as lifetime employment anymore. There's no such thing as people buying from a company because of the name of the company. People don't do that. They used to. They don't do it anymore. And that's a huge, you know, tectonic shift in our world that I think a lot of people haven't seen it. They don't understand. It is not the same. You can't just go get a job. You as a human being need to be very clear about the value you generate, how you generate it, what the people that directly interact with you get out of the value that you generate, and why they should keep you around, whether they're a customer or whether they're your boss. The value you generate has to be sufficiently great that it doesn't make sense not to have you around. It's the only way that you get the opportunity to keep generating value and then thereby get reward in return.
So in Gina, in the types of things that I observe Gina doing, there are all kinds of ways we talk about, you know, building the relationship, showing what people are interested in, serving the audience based on giving them what it is that they want to start with, to open up that relationship.
Right.
And one thing that I really enjoy with Gina is she's very good at telling stories that pull in your everyday life. And this is something that, of course, I teach as a storyteller and storytelling expert, but it's Gina does that so beautifully. And so you were telling a story about your dog the other day, Gina, which kind of reminds me of all of this, because what you did there was, for one thing, you showed the real you and your life, and you bridged the gap between an experience and a business lesson by simply showing something that was happening to you in your everyday life, and you used your dog, and people that love animals love for you to talk about your animals.
Absolutely, and it really relates so well because people can understand it at a different level. And I think that's
right.
What Stephen's doing with technology too, right?
Yep.
Yeah, I like to think so. And as you guys know, as you saw on the you know, the great page there on Blog Talk Radio, I wrote a book a couple of years ago. And the book is often hard to crisply categorize because it's a book about stories. It's a book of stories that illustrate how life works, what I call, you know, life principles, how life actually works. And I use snow skiing, which is one of my life passions, to illustrate it. And, in fact, I got an email yesterday from a lady that I had given a copy of the book, and she wrote me and she said, you know, she said, I'm not a skier, I'm not athletic, I just didn't really think that I'd get anything out of the book. She said, but first off, the guy I'm dating grabbed it and read it and then told me I had to read it, and I'm reading it now, and even though I've never skied, even though I don't have, you know, don't consider myself athletic, the stories and the, you know, the connection to how our whole lives fit together, whether it's the spiritual side of our life or the emotional side or the physical side, it's, you know, it's a big circle, and it's all, we tend to compartmentalize in the Western world, they're not compartments. They're all together.
They are. And
so, you know, connecting those dots and doing it with stories, and I try to do it with any technology I talk about, and I try to do it, you know, if I have a business client or whatever, with their, try to remind, like, business leaders, for example, look, your staff are human beings.
Mm-hmm.
Don't treat them like machines. It doesn't work. And your customers, if somebody's marketing, you know, using social media or whatever, your customers are human beings. Don't treat them like an audience. Treat them like human beings. Here's a perfect tip for you guys. And you may have told this, I haven't had a chance to listen to all of your shows or anything, but you may have mentioned this to everybody, but I think this is important. When you're speaking to a list of people, whether, you know, you're tweeting on Twitter or you're sending to an email list, or even when you're speaking in front of a group, it's harder there, but any of these times, the key is to speak to one person.
Mm-hmm.
One person. Your language, your thinking, the imaginary picture you have in your mind should be of one person, not an audience, one person. So as an example, on Twitter a number of months ago, I remember seeing a tweet from somebody I follow that said, "Good morning, all my followers." And it just struck me. I said, there is nobody who thinks of themselves as your follower. Nobody. Nobody. That's not, you don't wake up in the morning and go, oh, I'm a follower of that person. You don't see yourself that way. You see yourself as one person, you know, looking at your phone or looking at your computer, or but you're probably alone, or you're in a cube, or you're, you know, wherever you are, but you're one person. And so every communication that I create, at least when I think it through, is to one person. Every tweet is to you. It's to you. It's not to all of you.
Mm-hmm.
It's to you. And every email I send is to you. And even here on the phone, you know, I'm talking to two of you guys, but whenever I'm saying something, it's to you, where the you is any person who's listening to this at any time, because it really does apply to you.
Right.
And so for you as a business person, as a marketer, as a communicator, this is a huge lesson. If you can get this, it will change how your customers and prospects perceive you. It will change. And what it will do, as you guys can probably illustrate as well for the audience, what it will do is it creates a relationship that wasn't there. The difference between when you sit in a crowd of 1,000 people halfway back in the room watching a speaker, the difference between that and having a one-on-one cup of coffee with that same speaker is dramatic, even if the information is the same. And when we speak to one person in our communication, it feels like having a cup of coffee.
Mm-hmm. And we would say you do that same thing, talk to one person. Yes, in tweets, in teleseminars, if you're a person who does teleseminars, not speaking to you guys, you know, you all, a group, but speaking to one person. In a blog post, in an article, the same type of thing, it has such a different feel. And I know, Gina, when you review people's blogs with them, you know, share a little bit about some of the things that you notice in the blogs that speak to a group.
Say that one more time, Rhonda, because you kind of got garbled on my end. I think it's my phone.
Oh, I said you, of course, teach, you know, speaking to one person, not a group. So
it's imperative because when you're in your emails, blogs, articles, whatever, when you're saying something like, you guys, nobody feels like you're connecting with them. They they feel like you're just talking to the sky, the grass, the trees, but not to them.
Right.
And you've got to connect one-on-one to develop relationships. You can't just go out and talk to a big group.
Right.
Yeah. Exactly right. In fact, the other part of that, I think, is when you try to be too broad in your communication, what ends up happening is that nobody feels like they're in in that group. And so, you know, there's a balancing act, obviously, there. But that's the other part of it, is that you identify who you're talking to so that they go, yeah, that's me. You know, that I get it. She's talking to me. He's talking to me. This is to me. Okay, I need to pay attention. Right?
Yeah.
Because, you know, I'm sure that, you know, nobody has, you know, limited time, right? And so everybody's looking for the reason not to pay attention. You know, so we as communicators, we need to give them a reason to pay attention. And the reason for you to give is, look, I'm talking to you, and this is about you, and it's about our ability to work together to accomplish what you are looking to accomplish. And that level of communication is rare. So the more you do it, the more clearly your constituency is going to kind of get it, and the tighter the relationship becomes. And as you guys teach, the relationship, the tight relationship, is what generates trust. And it's trust that's necessary before somebody's going to buy.
Yeah, absolutely. You talk about having this circle of content, and you want to share, we teach a lot here about blogging and using the blog to build relationships and everything, and I've seen your videos about your circle of content, so share with us a little bit about that.
Sure. That's on the Geek Whisperer channel on YouTube right now, and I'm still building it, so there's going to be more coming. But the idea here is that the whole idea of a virtuous circle is that each part of the circle feeds the others and creates momentum and gives benefit. And so the virtuous circle of content is a recognition that, first off, human beings learn through multiple media. There, you know, an example is, for me, it is very difficult for me to be on the phone with someone and have them describe something that's complex using just words on the phone. I'm invariably pulling out a pad of paper, trying to draw out what they're describing to me in order to really begin to comprehend it. And even though I've dealt with, you know, complex systems my entire life, that's part of how I have to work it so that I can get it. And so if you only have the one medium of, in that case, audio, or the one medium of written word. So if you have a blog and your blog is just composed of the words on the page and maybe a picture, a single picture, your ability to communicate is limited. And in studying adult education and learning how people learn and so on, I teach skiing, and so part of that process is really kind of getting how people learn. And some people learn kinesthetically, which is by touch. Some people learn auditorially. They listen. Some people visualize, especially like they'll watch and they'll copy. And there's all these ways that people learn. And when you add multiple media into your communication, you begin to cross those boundaries and make better connections and therefore communicate better with your audience. So the virtuous circle of content is about not limiting yourself to one or two media, but using especially the various social media networks that are out there and social media tools that are out there to connect the media together to create an overall message. And so let me give you an example. So one of my coaching clients is a virtual assistant, and she's very good at organizing and filing and that kind of thing. So let's say, for example, that she wants to communicate to her her audience, her clients, how to organize their filing system. Well, she could write a blog post, write it out in text, and take a picture, put it on the blog. Well, okay, but that only goes so far. It only gives you sort of one layer of understanding. Well, what if she linked that blog post to an album on Flickr that had 20 photos? Wow, well now you kind of expand your understanding. You instantly see that you'd know more. And we haven't added any more text, we've just added more photos, more media. Well, what if she linked that to a video on YouTube that shows her process of filing and how she goes about filing? Wow, now you see a little bit more. And then what if she has the recording of a teleseminar where she's taking questions on filing and answering them from people, and you can get that recording and listen to it, and you can listen in your car, for example. Well, now you've got another medium, and you add all these media together, and you begin to see that by the end of all of those, even if they're short, I mean, 20 photos doesn't take you long to look at, 2.5-minute video, you know, this doesn't take a lot of time. But when you're done, you've gone all the way around that circle, and you're ready for more. You're ready for the next blog post. You're ready to apply some of this in your life. You may be ready to hire her to come and help you. You know, all of those things happen that are very unlikely to happen if you stick with just one medium. And so I encourage folks to build a strategy around a virtuous circle of content for everything that they're communicating to their constituencies, whether they're their existing customers or prospects or any other stakeholder that they have that is worth them spending time communicating with.
And that really ties into what Google is looking for these days anyway.
Well, it does. And, you know, it's interesting that you mentioned Google. If any of you have followed me on Twitter for very long at all, which, by the way, if you're not, you can do it S. Holtquist on Twitter. You've seen me say things like, look, here's my first rule of SEO, write good content. And the whole thing about Google and how the search engines do what they do, now, speaking for a minute here as a technologist, what Google's working on doing is finding the most relevant results for somebody who's searching. That's what they view their job as being. They, you know, somebody types in something, Google wants to give them what they want right away. That's their goal. So here's the question. So what are people looking for?
And if that is the question, and that's the problem too, because marketers and business owners tend to go out and they talk about the stuff that they've got to offer. So
right,
they're talking solutions. But what the people out there looking for is problems. They don't even know that the solutions exist.
That's right. Exactly. And so your ability to create all these different kinds of content, because Google knows that people like to see a video, they like to see photos, they like to see these things linked together, they like to read a blog post, especially if it's current.
Yep. Know,
And so Google builds their results and ranks their results based on those kind of characteristics, because that's what people ultimately want to see when they look at a search result.
Yeah.
And so, as, yeah, exactly. As you're building your communication, the cool thing about all this, you know, knowing kind of how Google does it, is what Google's telling you is what your prospects are looking for. That's all that means. It's, okay, here's what people want. And if you game the system, like some people try to do, you know, they try to game it, they try to sneak in. The problem is people then come to your site and they go, that is not what I wanted.
Mm-hmm.
And not only are they gone, but they tell their friends you're a jerk.
Right.
it's all counterproductive. So the key really is write good content, keep it current, and use the virtuous circle. Use all the media and link them together so that it's clear that, you know, all that, you know, this album and this video and this audio and this text and this blog entry, these are all, and maybe some articles if you've done some of those, these are all connected in a you know, circuitous link here in order to really give you what you want and teach you what you're looking for and give you the results that you really are seeking.
But there's two issues that people listening to this show bring up more often than any others. First one is they can barely turn their computers on. HTML, it might as well be Greek because they don't understand it. They don't even know what to do to put up a blog or a web page or in anything, and it scares them half to death to think about it. And the second is, okay, well, maybe I can find the money to go hire somebody to put up my website or my blog or whatever you're telling me I've got to do, but I can't figure out these sites. Facebook, Twitter, my dad actually called me last week and said, I just spent 8 hours trying to figure out how you get something put into Twitter. What the heck am I supposed to do? He truly didn't understand. And he looked and searched and everything, and all he could find were people talking about tweets and talking about Twitter, but nobody told him how to do it. So for the folks that are maybe in dad's shoes, how do they overcome all of that? Where do they start?
Great question, and thanks for asking it. There's a couple things I'll say. One of the things is obviously the connection that you and I have made. Anybody listening to the show can easily get, by following your link, what I call my Twitter strategies document. It's only like 8 or 9 pages long. And it lays all that stuff out. It shows exactly how you do it, and it also tells you how to do it without wasting any time on Twitter. So you can easily get that. There's also a second document that's on that link that's about how to take the whole circle and look at each of those sites that I just talked about and how those tie together. It's not so much the Twitter thing, which steps you right through, but it at least gives you the high-level picture of it. And, you know, I think that it's unfortunate, but you often need someone to step you through those things, primarily because, as I mentioned very early on in the show here, that there's so much fear around technology, and you know, part of that is, I think, because people are afraid they're going to break something, or they're afraid that, you know, they're going to somehow mess something up, so they have this fear that stops them in their tracks. And then you have the geeks who make you feel like an idiot because they know and you don't.
Yes.
Which
right.
By the way, is the thing I rail against more than anything else.
Yeah.
You know, I speak geek. I can hang with pretty much anybody. but I'm insistent that the only thing that matters is the ability of the technology to serve people. And so if you're keeping the secrets hidden, if you're insisting that you got to be able to speak geek and you got to have a comprehension around this, I don't even think it's being smart. I just think you have to have a certain kind of mind. If you insist on that, then you are specifically not serving others. And And so my job is to translate all that stuff, to make it very clear to people like your dad how it works, why it works, and, by the way, whether or not they should pay any attention. You know, is
yeah, even, that's another one, right?
Is it even important?
Yeah.
You know, I would ask your dad, why does he want to, right? And, you know, if he wants to set one up and you know, see how it works and then realize that it's not for him, that's fine, and I help him do that, help other people do that. But I would ask other questions first, like, okay, so what do you think, you know, what has you thinking about this, and what do you think you're going to gain from it, and, you know, what's your reason, you know, for doing it? And he may have some really great ones, and then we'll help him get going. But that's, you know, I do a social media program to help people kind of get started and to help them, you know, think through their strategies and give them an opportunity to ask any questions that they want and, you know, put them on teleseminars and all that stuff so that they can kind of really dig down into each of those areas we talked about earlier, each of the media types, so that, you know, they kind of get a good feel for how they all work together and how they all work individually and, you know,
right,
how to use them and all that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Linda.
A thing that people, that I often hear people say is, you know, especially they're in some business, they're bringing their business online, and they're going, you know, I mean, I see all this Twitter, Facebook, and all of this stuff, and yes, I know people should say that you need to do that and be in it, and I understand why it's important, but I just don't know if I can deal with it.
So two things to think about there, I think. You know, I do have some clients who have said that to me, and frankly, I've just taken it on for them, and I'll say, okay, look, let me just do that for you. And I get them all set up and help them understand how to use it and then help them understand how to budget their lives around it in a way that, again, serves them. So I've done that. And, again, I think the key, though, is to really ask yourself what it is you are looking to get, and then to talk to folks like you guys, like me, to get a feel for, okay, you know, is this going to help me doing that? You know, what is it that, you know, a blog could help me do? What is it that Twitter can help me? Twitter is a classic example because it's just such a simple thing. And, you know, I get a lot of commentary about Twitter from business people I know, usually with words like stupid somewhere in it. And in a lot of ways it is. But the real issue is, I think, that a lot of folks aren't realizing how important the relationship side is, and that the ability to, you know, kind of automate that, you know, that party, that networking event element of getting to know people has value, and that's where things like Twitter come in. But it has to be part of a process to move people somewhere else, to connect them more deeply with you through other means. Otherwise, it really is a waste of time. It's not going to be helpful. So there's a, you know, a combination of things that I help people do there, and really it's about really helping them connect with what it is for them in their world. Let's get rid of the techno geek talk, and let's figure out what it is you're trying to do, and then let's use the tools that'll help you do it.
Gotcha. And I want to talk for a minute because I saw that article on your blog about the iPhone.
Yes.
Do people need to be on their computer and on their phone and on all these other things, or what do you suggest?
Well, the short answer is no, you don't have to be in anything. So let's be very clear about that. You know, I find that one strategy that works very well, and again, this is in that little document, is that updates that you send, you can send from anywhere. You can send a quick text from your phone if you know how to text on your phone. You can do it from your computer. You know, there are, you know, a lot of different applications and so on you can use to send your updates. But And in fact, you can even automate your updates, which is something else that I won't go in depth into now. But if you have a number of things that you kind of have as your philosophy, or have that you'd like folks who are kind of superficially connecting with you to know, you can create those lists, and there are a bunch of programs that'll automate those for you, so that you can, you know, communicate those out at different times. But the point is that people like to get a sense that you're there. They like to kind of know they can that you're there, that every once in a while you're just going to tell them something about your life. And so I encourage folks to, you know, send a quick update from, you know, you're standing in line at the, you know, at the grocery store, or you're a friend of mine just recently went to Disney World, and I encouraged him. He's another one of my clients. I said, you know, when you're in line for a ride at Disney World, just tweet about it. You know, send a quick update. Hey, I'm standing in line at, you know, the Star Wars ride, and this is happening and that's happening, right? Because people just want to feel like they know you, they're with you, they know where you are, they know what you're doing. And so, yes, I encourage people to set up their phones to send to places like Twitter, but not to receive, because, you know, who wants, you know, 4,000 tweets in a day coming to your phone, for example. And again, a lot of those are much more your opportunity to tell folks about where you are. And then the rest of the strategy is around how you interact with folks who get back to you. And you want to do that. And that's, there's a lot of detail, again, in that paper that tells you exactly how to build a strategy to do that. It's really about responding to your direct messages, responding when people mention you, and spending most of your time engaging in that way.
Gotcha. Now, what do you personally do?
I carry an iPhone, and I have a Twitter application on my iPhone that I use, and I will use it to check people that are mentioning me and check my direct messages and update from my phone, you know, periodically, as I was just talking about. And then I have, you know, I use both the applications and the website on my computers when I'm in my office. But I make sure that it doesn't occupy huge portions of my day. That's one of the keys.
Gotcha. Now, any particular reason you use an iPhone as opposed to, say, a Google phone?
Well, you know, let me say this about that, right? One of the challenges in talking about particular technologies, as I kind of avoided earlier in the conversation, is that that it turns, in fact, I wrote a blog post about this too, it turns into a religious discussion very quickly. And I just don't have any interest in being, you know, in being right, morally right, about my choice in phone.
We're laughing because Gina, obviously, big Google phone addict.
Huge Google phone addict. Cannot stand the iPhone after I saw the Google phone.
So that's, you know, knock yourself out. By all means, you know, whatever works for people. I'm a strong proponent of finding things that work for you. For example, I can't use a G1. I am way too slow typing on a G1. Because of the keyboard.
I hate the keyboard.
And so what do you do on an iPhone instead?
Well, I use the soft keyboard on the iPhone. And
oh, there's a soft keyboard on the G1, too.
I know, I've used it. I've used it. So I have a friend that has a G1 that every once in a while I try to use it, and I'm like, I can't.
Have you seen the new soft keyboard that came out like 3 weeks ago?
I think so.
Because it is... It's actually nicer, I think, than the iPhone one because of the way that it does it. But you're right, and that was the point I was hoping you were going to make, which is find what works for you.
That's right.
So the big reason that I like the G1 as opposed to the iPhone is the fact that because it came out as open source, the apps come out much more frequently, and they do a wider variety of things. So it usually means that you're going to find solutions for what's going to work for you better with the G1 than with the iPhone, because you got to wait for Apple to come out with them for the iPhone. But the big point is find what works for you. Each person is going to find something different that works for them. I prefer Front Page. You might prefer Dreamweaver. But find what works for you. There are always going to be multiple different ways. Even on Twitter, there's how many applications to tweet?
Oh, hundreds, that's right.
Find the one that works for you. But the important thing is that you find something, as opposed to sitting there doing nothing because you feel technophobic.
That's right. And let me jump in and say this, that I learned somehow intuitively very, very early on that I think it's important for you to understand, which is that software and hardware is simply built and designed by a human being.
You got it.
They are thinking a certain way when they do it. And one of the, you know, the challenges when somebody feels like they're doing something wrong with a computer, with a phone, with anything, they feel like they're doing something wrong, they're not. If you feel like you're doing something wrong, you're not. What you're doing is what you think you should do in order to accomplish what you're trying to do. And the designer wasn't smart enough to figure out how you'd want to do it.
Yep.
And it's so that single shift, if you make that shift in your thinking about, you know, technology, and you realize this is not my issue, this is the issue of the bonehead that wrote this thing, then a lot of stuff changes. When I wrote about the iPhone before it came out, about 4 months before it came out, I wrote about it and I said, ladies and gentlemen, this is a world changer. And it doesn't matter whether or not the iPhone itself becomes a huge seller. What's happening is that the device that you carry in your hand will change. And
yes.
It won't any longer be a phone. It will be something else. Furthermore, it will have to be very natural for you to use, because Apple's going to set the bar. So that, to me, is kind of the key. If you, everybody's going to find devices that are more like they think, that are more intuitive for them. Use that one. You know,
well, and
there's
something else implied in what you just said, and that is the technology that you're using, both the hardware and the software, it is designed by a person. And that person's going to think one way. But another designer's going to think another way. So each of us needs to find the person that is the designer that thinks most like us, and we will find tools that work for us.
That's exactly it. That's exactly right. And so every time I look at technology, that's the lens I look through. Every time I look through that lens, does this person think like me, or if I'm doing assessment work for a customer, does this person think like my customer thinks? Do they understand the environment my customer's in? Do they understand what I need? Going back to the iPhone, I've bought each model as it's come out, and I bought the first one, and I waited 6 months to buy a new phone so that I could get the iPhone. And the reason was, it didn't have anything to do with Apple per se, didn't have anything to do with, you know, the specific design or any features of the phone. I was carrying a smartphone, and I carried a smartphone for a number of years before that, and I was so tired of the stupid thing rebooting and crashing in the middle of a phone call and the other things that it was doing that I just wanted something that I could trust to be reliable, to be a phone, you know, and do these other things. So I needed email and I needed web and all that, but I really wanted a smartphone that would do those other things but that I could reliably use as a phone. And that was my reason. That was my impetus for doing it. It's not the reason that I bought the second one and the third one. There were other reasons for that, but it has continued to be a reliable device for me, which is the absolute sort of lowest level requirement for me anymore. And there are other devices out there that aren't, and I'm not even willing to try them until I know that they'd be at least as reliable.
Well, and another thing to think about is if you've got lots of different things that you need a phone, you need a camera, you need a video camera, lately, in our latest technology that's come out, you can find many different things that offer a bunch of them at one time. Like my G1 has a regular camera, it has a video camera, it has my regular phone. It has almost everything I can do on my computer with the exception of HTML design. It's the one thing I don't have an application for that I'm hoping someone comes out with soon. But short of that, it does everything. So instead of having to carry my digital camera and my video camera and my phone and my computer, I can just pick up my phone and go. Makes my life a lot more convenient. It has totally changed how I live my life by having that one thing instead of all of these things that I have to carry around.
Right.
I can go to the beach and work from the beach if I want. I can go sit in Starbucks and work at Starbucks if I want. I can do all these things that I couldn't do before because I've got all of them rolled up into one device that's easy to carry.
So you
want to be looking at that.
That's exactly right on. I mean,
and you know what's really funny?
What's that?
Now, for example, I have kind of a plain old cell phone. I just recently got a somewhat of an upgrade. My big issue has to do with adaptive technology for blind people, which is expensive and all those other things. And, you know, the G1, after spending about 6 hours and trying to figure it out, determined that the thing wouldn't talk to me, and I was supposed to be able to see a screen, something on a screen that I just couldn't see to actually go to this thing where it was going to talk, and it just wasn't working. And I didn't like the keyboard. But anyway, so I finally at least now have a phone that has a camera in it and an MP3 player because I figure, good, I have to listen to a lot of different things. That's how I read. I can turn something into an audio file and listen to it and go. Well, my mom was going, oh, your phone has a camera too. She said, I just don't know about all these phones with cameras and this. I just want a phone. And I said, well, that's fine. We were in the grocery store, and my guide dog, Molly, was sniffing at a package of steaks. And I took a picture of it because it was just so darn cute, and I showed it to her. And she goes, oh, that's really cute. I said, see, you know, that's why it's neat to have a camera inside of your phone.
Right. Oh, exactly right. Exactly right. I mean, in fact, you know, I hadn't had a camera in my phone until I got an iPhone, and I still have to remember, wait a minute, I got a camera.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Oh,
I did that too.
I should take a picture of that, but I don't have a camera. Oh, wait, I do have a camera.
And for the longest time, although I had my regular digital camera and I had my video camera, I was taking pictures or videos, but I wasn't uploading them onto the internet. Because I wanted to be able to edit them, and I just didn't want to take the time to learn how to use the software to allow that to happen.
Right.
Well, the G1 now allows you to edit pictures and videos on your phone before you upload them. And I'm finding that I am now putting videos and pictures up online that I would never have done before just because I've got that convenience of editing them right there with my finger touching the screen.
Right.
So simple. So many times devices can help you to be able to overcome things that are causing you to not take action to allow you to take action if you find the right one. And that's really a matter of trial and error. What Rhonda just said about, you know, not finding one that worked for her, I find really interesting because that's what happens for most people. They try it, they get frustrated with it, they throw it out, they don't even bother to touch it again. My G1, I have a special thing called text-to-talk, I think it is. My G1 talks to me for everything. It can read web pages to me. It can read my navigation to me. It can read Facebook to me. It can read Twitter to me. It works for me to do that, but apparently it doesn't work for Rhonda to do that. Is that right or wrong? No. Neither one is right or wrong. It's what works for you.
Exactly.
Yeah, and the person that I was with in the store couldn't see. He said, you know, I had to look at a screen and press. I said, well, I can't see that thing. I have no idea what you're talking about. And it was like, well, it's a quarter inch to the right. I'm like, oh, well, that's not going to make very much sense. If I have to look at something to make it talk, it's just
he
not
he just didn't show you the right thing. You don't have to look at anything to make it talk if you don't want to. Someone
right.
has to set it up one time.
Right.
But after it's set up the first time, it does it for you. And the way I have mine set up, I have it set so that it doesn't just automatically start talking, because I do use my phone in public often. But I can change that so that it does do it on autopilot. That's just, I just have to know to do that. So maybe somebody helped you set it up one time.
Right. You know, and that may be true, because I'm not finding it. So, you know, it's just those types of things where you find these different things, and the next time
that you and I are together, let's let you try using my phone, and I'll change the setting on it so that it just talks, and let's see if it works for you. I mean, I've got the phone, and I've got that downloaded to it anyway.
Right. Yeah, that would be interesting to give it a try. And that keyboard, gosh, I don't know how, it's always interesting how anyone gets used to those keyboards. I'm a touch type, so I'm always wanting to work and put onto something so that I can type normally.
Right,
it's really small. But yeah, it is, it's different. So it's always getting used to things, finding ways to make it work. And a lot of times, just like with that guy, like there might have been a way to make the thing work, but two different techs in the store couldn't figure out how to make it work, and I obviously couldn't use it if I couldn't get it set up right in the first place, so I had to abandon it for the time being. It doesn't mean that I won't try going back to it, but at least at that time, there just wasn't apparently a way that anybody could think to make it happen, and that was just unfortunate. So that just
one of the things that I'm hoping that they come up with for both the iPhone and the G1 pretty soon is there are these Bluetooth keyboards, maybe you've seen them, Steve, that are, they're not really a keyboard. They display the keyboard on any surface. They're just kind of like a digital keyboard, if you will, but they're a regular full-size keyboard and it works through Bluetooth. I'm hoping that they will add that to the cell phones, because if they can do that, then you have a regular full-size keyboard any place you have a flat-top surface.
Right. Yeah, there's some... It's going to be interesting to see how that pans out. They've actually been around for a while.
They
really haven't caught on. So,
They certainly would be very useful for a phone, I would think, more so than for a computer.
Yeah, they first came out, believe it or not, for the Palms, back when everybody was carrying a Trio.
Oh, gotcha.
Yep.
Interesting.
So that's again, we'll kind of see how that plays out. There's been some talk about it again recently, but I just haven't seen, I haven't seen anybody kind of take it on and seen it kind of explode. So again, we'll see. It's hard for me because, I feel like I've kind of found my, my system. It works very well for me, and I just, I don't need or frankly want one of those. But I certainly know some people that do.
Well, what I would like, I don't care if it's that, but what I would really love is to have a full-size keyboard that can be with me wherever I happen to be with my phone.
Right.
So that when you have to go type something, I can have it, and it doesn't exist today. And I see that as being one of the fastest, easiest ways of getting a totally portable keyboard that you don't have to carry around with you that would work with a cell phone.
Right.
I don't understand why so many of the Palm type of things have these wonderful little keyboards that fold up and basically are the same size as your phone. They just kind of, you just unfold them, and why they don't have them for phones. There is a Verizon phone that talks to you, but it has a really tinier keyboard even than the G1, and there's no way to attach a keyboard. And it's the same type of thing we're talking about, where that's another frontier for people that type a lot or people that are touch typists. A bunch of lights on the table wouldn't help me either, because I couldn't figure out where would be the positioning key. So, it's just interesting how these things come and change, and it's based on the needs that people have. I am always surprised that they don't have more full-size keyboard options for these phones.
Yeah, I am. I'm too surprised, and I think that it'll be interesting. I think that as these devices become more and more, kind of like Gina's using them, the center of the universe for people, I think that we will see some changes. I think that, more and more folks will begin to ask for those kinds of things, and that we'll start to see them, become more and more available. So I'm not going to try to guess kind of what might happen in the future there, but I've always thought that the, you know, the laser-based ones that, you know, that project the keyboard onto the desktop surface in front of you were pretty interesting, but they don't give you tactile feedback. And then the ones that, the roll-up ones and fold-out ones, I actually have a fold-out one for a Palm, but I just never used it very much. So, you know,
well, it's cumbersome to have to drag them around with you if you've got them on your, you know, if you've got to carry it separately from your phone and you can't fit it in your pocket, you're not likely to bring it with you.
Right.
I have tried probably more than 24 times to contact companies like T-Mobile and Verizon and Sprint and Cingular because I live a very different kind of life. I'm on the road 24/7, 365 days of the week. I live in this RV that travels all over the country. I'm going from city to city. I'm doing all these cool things. I would be such a great beta tester for them, and the success stories I would think would make for really great advertising for them. And yet, trying to reach their marketing departments to be able to talk to them about it is impossible. Same thing happened several years ago. I had a Pontiac Aztec, which is a car that they don't even make anymore. It was one of those cars that everybody thought looked weird, but it could be turned into lots of different things. It was great for people who wanted to go camping. We used it to go to the drive-in movie. We could do so many more things that we couldn't do because of the car. And yet every time you'd see an ad for a Pontiac Aztec, they mentioned all the same old things that everybody always does with the car. And it was like, boy, if people only knew that the car could do all these other things too, I bet they'd sell more of them. Well, sure enough, I tried reaching Pontiac several times, sent them videos and everything. Never got any response. And then the next thing you know, the car's coming off the market. And I'm like, gosh darn it, all these great ideas that if the companies were thinking from the minds of the consumer instead of the minds of the company, they could actually get more people to buy them. But companies tend to think from the solution and not from the problem, so they don't bother.
Right, and again, like even what I wrote to trying to deal with this G1 phone thing, and I even wrote to T-Mobile and so forth, all they said was, well, we have other phones, and I'm like, well, that did not solve the problem. I didn't want another phone. I wanted a G1. It could have talked, and you didn't even bother to write back and tell me, this is an application, and here's how you have to set it up.
But see, they wouldn't know that.
Right.
Well, I think
they wouldn't know that because they didn't design the application. It's not like the iPhone where Apple has to either design it or approve it. T-Mobile, there's all these independent people who are out there doing their own thing that T-Mobile knows nothing about.
Yeah, and they didn't bother to research it either, so, you know.
Yeah, I think that's one of the sort of the fundamental distinctions between various models of offering solutions. But I think you hit on something that is really important for your listeners to think about, which is, look, the big companies don't get it. The big companies don't understand relationships. They don't understand the things we talked about earlier that, you know, people don't buy from companies anymore.
Right.
The only reason you buy from a T-Mobile or a Verizon or an AT&T is because the phone that you want is sold by them. And if the phone that you want is sold by more than one, you're going to pick which one you use based on what your friends tell you about the coverage in your area. I mean, that's how that stuff works. And the big companies fundamentally don't understand that. So when you talk to, you know, T-Mobile about the G1, well, T-Mobile really has literally nothing to do with the G1 at all. You know, G1 is produced by other people. You know, Android is produced by the open source consortium led by Google, and the apps are built by the app people, and the phone's built by HTC. And, you know, there's no way to easily sort of grab onto somebody and say, you know, fix this or what's the deal? And yet, if there was, for example, for you, Rhonda, if there was a person online that you know who was a specialist in adaptive technologies, who you could go to and just say, look, I'm looking for a phone. And he would say, you know, buy this phone, put this application on it, configure it this way, and it will do what you need it to do. Then you jump at that, and you develop a relationship with that person.
Absolutely.
That you know, you would just, then you don't even have to worry about shopping. You just go ask him, right? You're like, okay, you know, Fred, what do I buy this time around? You know, I'm looking for a new, you know, whatever. And he says, oh, go buy this one because, you know, here's your challenges, I know, because we've worked together, and these things will address those, and so you can go buy this.
Yeah.
And I think that's, you know, that's why, again, each of you has so much to offer, and it's easy to think that you're competing against T-Mobile when you're really not. Nobody wants to do business with them.
Well, and see, that's where I think joint ventures come into play, and this is why I'm so adamant about getting people to use joint ventures early on in their business rather than waiting until they've got a product of their own to create. Because joint ventures can make all of that stuff possible. All you've got to do is look at stuff that's already out there that people are already buying, find the problems associated with them, figure out how to solve them, and then go use joint ventures to help you build the whole business from the ground up. It's easy, but you've got to think outside the box about what you're doing in terms of solving problems in order to figure out what to do.
Well, exactly right. And as, you know, again, we touched on a little bit earlier, I think it requires people to shift their mindset from what I call the employee mindset, which is really a mindset that says stuff happens to me, right? Work comes to me. Complaints come to me, stuff happens to me, and I react to it.
Right.
The shift is to an entrepreneurial mindset or an independent mindset that says, I make it happen.
Yes.
It's completely up to me. And when stuff changes out there, when something occurs in the circumstances and the environment around you, you go, okay, circumstances changed. How am I going to respond to the circumstance change? Because I can't sit here and complain about it. That helps nothing.
Right. Right.
And I can't sit here and wait for something else to come to me. That doesn't do anything either. So what am I going to do, and how do I deliver value to other people so that, you know, they're ready and they're going to come right back in and, you know, continue to use my products and or my services because they address a need or a want that they have right now. And so
there's a great book out by a guy by the name of John Gordon, JONGordon.com, called The No Complaining Rule. And it's about that exact mindset shift. How do you cause that to happen? It's how do you overcome the negativity that comes with complaining in the workplace? And how do you adapt so that you don't cause that, as well as how do you live with others who are causing it? Great book, fabulous book. One of the points that they make is that you want to look at everything as a have to or a get to.
Right.
If you look at everything as a have to or a get to, well, shoot, you get to do all this stuff. You only have to do things like die or pay taxes, right? We've only got about 90 seconds left, so before we get out of time, I want to let everybody know where they can find you, Steve.
Happy to do that. Since I am your Geek Whisperer, you can find me at mygeekwhisperer.com. And that's probably
and also at askggg.com/infinite. Askggg.com/infinite. And I know you've got a great newsletter because I signed up for it earlier today. Can't wait to be reading great tips about how to tame the savage technology that's all around you. It has really been my pleasure having you as a guest today getting to hear more about the fact that it's really possible for all of us, even those technophobics out there, to really use technology in some great ways to help build relationships that can help to grow your business. So thank you so much, Steve. Thank you so much, Rhonda. The story lady at ProfitableStorytelling.com.
We will be back next Tuesday at noon Eastern with another great episode of Relationship Marketing 101. Rhonda, I just emailed you about a really wonderful guest that I'm excited about. So go check that email out because I think you're going to like it.
I know I will. Yes, it'll be awesome. Thank you so much, and Stephen, thank you. And it's a pleasure to continue to grow our relationship, too.
Wonderful, Rhonda. Gina, thanks so much, and we'll speak to you next time.
If I can ever be of service to you, Stephen, just let me know.
Will do.
Likewise.
Have a great day.
Take care, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.